several times after you've had lunch. So we've also got these shorter. This one will be just 30 minutes. We'll go from now to 2:35, and then we'll have a 10-minute break, and then it'll be the men and the women are going to break out into two different groups, and it'll just be Q&A and discussion. So let's go ahead here. Any comments or questions about this before we move ahead? All right. Mistake number 9, failing to parent with joy. So I want you to picture a home where there are rules, and they are on time for church, and they have filled out their lesson. They have learned their memory verse. Their elbows are not on the table. They say, pass the peas, please. But there is no joy in the home. So they sit down. Somebody says a prayer. You pass the food. You eat the food. You pick up your plate. You take it to the sink. You go do your homework, and just, there's no smiles, or it's just kind of sour. Does anybody want to live in that home? Does that sound like a fun place for kids to be? Kids are a lot of fun. I enjoyed seeing your kids when we were for lunch, you know, adorable kids you've got here. And you know, they're just, when we're looking at little kids, it should make us smile. They're fun, they're funny, they're enjoyable. Yes, they're work, and anything worthwhile is work, but we should enjoy them and they should enjoy being there. Don't misunderstand that. That doesn't mean the main purpose is to just make people happy. Because when we're being godly, is everything going to make us happy? No, sometimes we have to do things that are hard, right? Things that are hard are not happy feelings, but we have to do them. But have you noticed that when we do the things that are hard, it makes life easier? In fact, I'll just put this in a nutshell. If you go through life making all the easy choices, you're going to have a hard life. If you go through life doing the hard things, you're going to have an easier life. But in that life, there should be some joy. So just look at these verses here. First off, in the relationship, and this is actually, the text goes on to talk about the romantic relationship there, be intoxicated in her love. But it says also, rejoice in the wife of your youth. Then the parent-child relationship. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he will have joy of him. Let your father and mother be glad. Let her rejoice that gave birth to you. Proverbs 23. Proverbs 15. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face. But when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. A cheerful heart has a continual feast. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than fattened ox served with hatred. The worthy woman puts on her tongue the law of kindness. Think about what your tongue does in the home. Not just the rules it makes or the orders it gives. What's the tone? Let's say mom is walking in and you got some teenagers, some little ones and stuff, and just everything's a mess. There's dirty socks here, there's that, there's stuff on there, and she's just like, you know, I cannot believe what a pigsty this is. I don't know why you people think that I'm your mate. I'm so sick and tired of just picking up these clothes all the time. What's that sound like to the kids? How effective is that to the kids? You know what might be a lot more effective? You know, make it into a game. Said, everybody in here right now, we're going to play a game. And it's like, I'm going to see if you guys, you know, have them race to see who can clean it up first. Or if you can clean it up before 30 seconds, no spankings or no $5 fines. If you can't, the spankings and the $5 fines, forget. Whatever, make it fun. It's like, go. Which is going to get more effect? The second one, you know, having some fun with it is going to be a lot more effective. Just, you know, doing something playful, making it a game instead of just like complaining. Look at this. A joyful heart is a good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones, Proverbs 17. And of course, the fruits of the spirit, love, joy, peace. So I want to ask you a question. I've been doing this the last couple of years, and I've been getting some really interesting answers. So I want to take time for about three. I want everybody to think for just a moment about one of your favorite childhood memories as it relates to your mom or dad. Think of one of your favorite childhood memories that relates to your mom or your dad. Then we're going to illustrate something from this. Okay? Has anybody got one? Some favorite memory in relationship to your mom or your dad. If you've got one, raise your hand. I want to hear it. Or your parents would be sad. So there's some grandparents. Here's your kids. Think of some fond memory. Right here and then here. We'll go here first.
Well, just my dad would take me fishing, or my mom, like when she would take me shopping for my birthday.
All right. Dad taking her fishing, mom taking her shopping.
My dad taking me and my brother backpacking.
All right. So, how much money was spent there? Not a lot of money, unless you bought a ton of stuff shopping. But this has been kind of consistent. It's been really interesting to hear. Sometimes what parents will do is they will ignore their kids, and then spend $8,000 on a trip to Disney World, right? And then how does the trip go? Yeah, everybody's arguing it's not great, and then you're standing in line, why do we have to sit in this stupid line? I don't want to ride this. Well, your sister rode that one, now you have to ride this one. It's a dumb ride, you know, and they're arguing the whole time. It's $8,000, and it was supposed to be this great, beautiful memory, and it's not. What I've been finding out, almost everybody picks out something simple. One person said, sitting in the Lazy Boy with my dad eating sardines while we watched this, you know, one comedy. You know, and it's somebody else, you know, eating popcorn. You know, my dad, a certain night of the week, he would make popcorn. Or just little things. Almost always, it's little things. Do you think that when your dad took you fishing, that he knew that would be especially appreciated years later? You don't always know which thing is going to be the hit. Y'all remember Thomas the Tank? Thomas the Train things. You know, when my 21-year-old was little, he liked Thomas the Train, and it was kind of expensive, but I went and got it for him. I thought, he's going to like that. And he opened it up. He was just a little guy. And I thought, he's going to like Thomas. He goes, where is his friends? Because you remember, what was the show? Thomas and Friends, yeah, there's some clever marketing there, I guess. But it's not always what you think it's gonna be. But our children, you know, do fun things with them. Fun family rituals, you know, routines. Partly, lots of times, it's routines. They would say, we would always watch this together. We'd always do this together. Make sure that there's joy in your home. There's going to be some correction. There's going to be some spanking. There's going to be some discipline. But that works much better in a house where there's joy. And after those corrective things, let there be an apology and let there be a hug. And now, let's move forward and have fun. Enjoy your kids. All right, number 10, failing to use rod and reproof. The Bible says, the rod and reproof bring wisdom. What if you just use the rod? You know, you're walking by dad, or dad walks in the room, he goes, whack! What'd you learn? Yeah, stay away from dad. How about just reproof? So Bertina was at Walmart one time, and there's a lady, and she's got the buggy and the little, you know, kid in the buggy, and he's pitching a fit. And he's screaming at his mom, he's trying to kick her, and he's yelling stuff like, I hate you! And he's trying to kick her, and I'm guessing she's read a book or a parenting article that encouraged her to explain to the child how you feel, because that's what she does. So this toddler is trying to kick her from his buggy seat, screaming at him, yelling, I hate you. And she goes, it doesn't make mommy feel good when you say that. No fit pitching toddler has ever gone, oh, I mean, that's the goal. You're not trying to kick your mom to make her feel good. You're not telling your mom you hate her to make you feel good. He's got an exact opposite goal in mind. But there she is reproving him. What you're doing is not making me feel good. So he just leaned up as far as he could to get as close to her face as he could and yelled, shut up! It's not a happy kid. Just the rod is not enough. Just reproof is not enough. The rod and reproof, Proverbs says, and I'll give you the verse here in a minute. The rod and the proof is what brings wisdom. And there's value in the lecture. How many of you grew up in a home where when you were in trouble, when you disobeyed, and don't punish a child because they had an accident. You know, punish disobedience. You might hold them responsible for an accident. Okay, you were being careless. You're like, you knocked a baseball through the neighbor's window. What do? You take responsibility. You know, you fix it or pay for it. You know, there's responsibility, but that's not punishment. But how many of you grew up in a household where when you disobeyed, you got a spanking, but you also got a lecture? Raise your hand if you grew up in that household. Which did you wish would end, and go ahead and get to the other one? Yeah, you wanted the lecture end, just go ahead and get to the spanking. Why?
Spanking was quicker.
Yeah, get it over with. The spanking is only going to hurt here. The lecture hurts here. And plus you just want to get it over with. So there's a couple things here. One, we want to get to their conscience. We don't want to just this to be a thing, okay, it was my job to spank you, you got spanking, we're done. No, if he didn't learn a lesson, it didn't do any good. If he goes away with a spanking without a change in his heart, it didn't do any good. There needs to be the lecture said, this is why you don't do that to your brother. This is why you don't do that to that other child. And help them realize, would you want somebody to do that to you? How would you have felt? You get to their heart. And then there's the punishment and the apology and the hug. But here's another thing. It's the anticipation. So like if you go to the doctor and he says, I'm sorry, I got to give you a shot. That's not too bad, right? What if he goes, I hate to tell you, but I'm going to have to give you a shot. It's going to be really painful. You might want to hold on to something. He pulls it out. Roll up your sleeve. Are you ready? You know, it's the same shot. It turbo boosts it. You know, the same swat is going to have more of an effect when there's some anticipation of it than just and done. And so it really does work. The rod and reproof bring wisdom. But a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. And also, as we said, the reaction afterwards. If a child gets a spanking and stomps away mad, are you done? No, this is not like a Pharisee checklist. I gave the spanking, we're done. No, what was the purpose of the discipline? To train the child. If he's walking away muttering under his breath and stomping, has he trained yet? No. So there we need to get to that heart, and he needs to apologize. A lot of spankings with mine when they were little went kind of like this. Oh no, what did mommy say do? Mommy said do it. And what did you do? I didn't do it. I say, so now what do you have to get? The spanking. I said, that's right. And then this is just something I would do. You don't have to do this, but I found involving the child a little bit, so it's not just something that happened to them. Psychologically, I like to involve the child, so I'd give them a choice. You know, later it'd be more here, but when they're little, it's just here. I'd say, which hand do you want it on? Go like, and you know, so now they've got some skin in the game, literally, you know. And then I say, all right, I might say, do you want to go tell mom you're sorry first, or do you want to get your spanking first? And I'd let them choose. And they'd be, I'll do spanking first. I'd say, okay. And then they'd get their spanking. Oh, that's okay, now go tell mom you're sorry. And then they'd go over and say, I'm sorry, I disobeyed. And she'd say, yes, you know, okay, thank you very much. And they'd get the hug. And then they go. And after discipline like that, then how does the child behave after that? Then they're happy, and they're wanting to please, and everything's peaceful. So those are important principles. Let's see here. We're in at 2:35. We've got a few more minutes here. Number 11, settling for situation control instead of training the child. Look at that title again. Settling for situation control instead of training the child. Sometimes people are just trying to control a situation. This story is about Brienne. There's my oldest three. That's April in the back, then Adam, Brienne. That's over in the Czech Republic where we used to live. That's where we're back there on a visit. This is about Brienne at that age, and I've got that up there so you can envision her at age three. Now, this would be different for younger children. It can be different from this, but this was appropriate for at age three. So we're blessed with six kids, three boys, three girls. All good kids, all had various issues and challenges and stuff. One of them, they had different personalities. Some were more pleasers, some were more independent-minded, and both of those have advantages and challenges to train in. Three of them went for the nuclear option one time and decided they were not going to obey. That would have been April and Zach and Brienne. The other ones never did it. They would get in trouble for things, and then we'd move on, and later they would get in trouble again. But three of them, one day, they decided they were not going to obey. And this is about Brienne, who was, except for this day, one of the best, easiest of all. Probably Brienne, Bertina maybe need to spank her more often than I did. You spent more time with her, but I almost never spanked Brienne. I mean, just a look of disapproval or just that was all it needed until she was three. And she decided to go for it. And so here's how it went. Let me check my time here. Yeah. We're getting in the car. She's old enough it's a booster seat instead of a car seat. And she's old enough to get herself in the booster seat. So it was her job, when we get in the car, she gets in the booster seat, she snaps herself in. Well, we hop in, and doors close, I put it in reverse, start backing up, and April says, Daddy, Brienne didn't get in her booster seat. I said, Brienne, get in your booster seat. And she didn't. This is not like Brienne. Brienne always obeys. She's not obeying. So I go up to a side road and I pull over by a creek, and I spanked her harder than I ever had. And you'll see kind of why. I got out with her and we had a talk, and I explained to her that it's my job to teach her to obey, and you know, et cetera, and all that. She has to get in the booster seat. And I went over, my mom always used a switch on me. I usually don't use a switch, but there was a bush nearby by the creek and I got a switch and I said, so, you know, you didn't obey, so you're gonna have to get a spanking. And I spanked her and she cried, but not as much as I might have expected. And I said, now, get in the car seat. And she got up and she got in the car and she sat down beside the car seat. I brought her back outside. We had the lecture again. I explained to her what my job was. I had to teach her to obey. And we have the lecture, and I said, you're gonna get spanked harder this time. And I said, now this time, please get in the car seat. And I spanked her harder. She cried a little bit. Got in the car and sat down beside the booster seat. I pulled her back out. We had the lecture again. And I spanked her hard, harder than I'd ever spanked her before. I mean, didn't hurt her at all, but before this was about all it ever needed before. And she got down, she sat down beside the booster seat. I brought her out again. We had the lecture again. It was the fifth time before Brianne finally sat down in the booster seat and snapped herself in. And I got in the car and drove away. Now, what would be an easier way for me as a parent to have handled that?
Buckled her in.
Yeah. She's three. I'm a grown man. I can put a three-year-old in a car seat. That would have been controlling the situation. Would that have trained her? What was my daughter choosing to do that day? She was choosing to rebel and disobey. For me to bodily put her in there at age three, now at a younger age it might be different, but at age three, for me to just bodily put her in there, she wouldn't have had to obey. That would have been controlling her, but not training her. Now, you might have some time where you need to control a small child. But on that day at age three, when she was defiantly rebelling, the thing that needed to change was her defiant rebellion. And that was, and me just controlling the situation would not have trained her that she had to obey. Later that day, I asked her, I said, Brianne, why did you do that? Why did you keep sitting down beside the car seat? I said, did you think Daddy was gonna give up? And she went, uh-huh. And that day, my little girl needed to find out that her daddy wasn't gonna give up. And I don't know what got in her that day. And she wasn't crying that hard. I mean, she had just decided battle zones. And she knew what she's going to get, but she thought if she kept doing that, she would win. Now she's raising her own little girls and doing a good job. And people around the country, when they meet her, they say, oh, you're the car seat girl. So if you ever meet her, you can say that to her. I made this point in Maryland one time, and a mom came to me two or three days later, and she said, that was a life-altering experience for me, because I would just put her there, like in her high chair and stuff. And again, a small child doesn't have the ability to put themselves everywhere. But after listening to that point, she changed her approach, and in just two or three days, I can't remember what it was, she said, my daughter is obeying and she is happier. Isn't that what we want? Don't we want happy, obedient children? Happy, obedient children need to be trained. What does Proverbs 22 say? Does Proverbs 22 say, control a child, and when they are old, they will not depart? What does Proverbs 22 say? Train a child, and when they are old, they will not depart. So there will be some controlling, but we need to train them. Saying, they're not going to do that under my roof is not enough. Train them, teach them self-control so they will behave themselves under any roof. Because sometimes they're going to be under a friend's roof or a neighbor's roof. And someday they're going to have their own roof. And if all I've done is control them, then it shouldn't be a surprise if they're saying, I can't wait till I'm 18. Because they want to head to that far country. But if we've gotten to their heart and trained them to do the right thing, then what are they going to do when we're not looking? They're going to do the right thing. They're going to make good choices because it was trained. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. Not just control. Some control, but not just control. We're trying to train their hearts. That's the key. So the little boy that, it was either a Sunday school class or school, I'm not sure which, but he kept not sitting down when he's supposed to, and they kept trying to get him to sit down, he kept not. Finally, when he did sit down, he said, okay, but I'm still standing up on the inside. Job's not done. You know, we need him sitting down on the outside and sitting down on the inside. And they're happier then. Got a couple more minutes. We'll try to get in a couple more here. Number 12, mistaking taking them to church for bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Really sad comment one time. I was visiting a brother. I was doing this series somewhere, and they took me to a hospital to visit a brother, and he was relating to me his disappointment with his children. And his children were middle-aged. None of them were faithful to God, four kids. And he said, not one is faithful to God today. And that's a tragedy, and that's sad, and there can be different reasons for it. But what he said next, I'm afraid, identified part of the reason. Listen to it. He said, I had four children. Not one of them is faithful. I don't know what happened. I took them to church all those years. Can you see what happened? Look at his statement again. He's mystified and confused. I took them to church, so I don't know why they're not faithful. What's the problem there? All right, he did the taking and not their going. Can you imagine those kids after a while? It's like, oh, we got to go to church and stuff. And here's this. If my child, if you work in the emergency room, okay, and my child comes into you about to die of starvation from malnutrition, and you're having to put IVs and everything, you say, what's happened? Where's this child been? I say, I don't know what happened. You know, I fed him Sunday dinner all these years. What's the problem? Yeah, Sunday dinner is not going to give the nourishment a child needs. Average child, by the time you think of all the time they get and all the influences they get in public school, if they're in public school, all the influence that they're getting on TV, if they're watching on TV, all the influence from video games, if they're watching video games, all the influence they're getting from their friends, if in the middle of all of that, they get a 40-minute Bible lesson on Sunday morning, a sermon, and a 40-minute class on Wednesday night, what is that against all the corruption that they're facing? Yeah. So please bring your children to Bible class. Let them be there with the other kids. Let them be learning, you know, in good opportunities to learn this and learn that. That can be an assistant to you. But whose job is it to train your kids up in the Lord? Ephesians 6 didn't say, take your kids to church and let the church raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Who did it say to do it? Fathers do that. Who did it say in Deuteronomy 6? You talk to them when you rise up, when you walk in the way, when you're, et cetera, et cetera. All right, our time is up. We're going to stop right. Oh, let me just finish this 30 seconds. Teach them diligently to lead to your sons. Yeah, that's right, we had that already. We're going to stop right there. And the other ones we may get to during the question and answer period or not. Thank you very much.
So at 2:45, the men are going to stay in the auditorium, and the women are going to go to the back corner classroom with the pews, and we'll have separate sessions there.